Welcome to the Passive Mobile Home Park Investing Podcast with your host, Andrew Keel. This is the podcast where you can get the education you need to invest 100% passively in the highly profitable niche of mobile home parks.
Welcome to the Passive Mobile Home Park Investing Podcast. This is your host, Andrew Keel, and today we have Steve Edel and Justin Gonzalez from Due Diligence Partners on the show. Before we dive in, I want to ask you a real quick favor. If you get any value out of this show, would you mind taking an extra 30 seconds and leaving us a review? This helps us get more listeners, and it means the absolute world to me. Thank you so much for making my day with that review of the show. All right, let's dive in. Due Diligence Partners is presently the only end-to-end national due diligence service for manufactured housing communities. Managing partner Justin Gonzalez is a Navy veteran and entrepreneur with diverse leadership experience in real estate, finance, commercial aviation, and manufacturing. He is an active real estate investor with over 14 years of experience and has overseen over 150 mobile home park due diligence projects in the acquisition phase to date. His partner, also on the show today, Steve Edel, became an entrepreneur in his mid-20s after working for companies of all sizes in the IT field. Steve became involved in the mobile home park asset class, owning communities, and quickly came to realize that the biggest industry shortcoming was the need for proper and professional due diligence. Justin and Steve, welcome to the show, guys.
Thanks for having us. I appreciate it. It's good to see you again.
Yes. Yeah, thank you, Andrew.
Yeah, totally. Steve, would you mind by starting us out and telling us a little about your story and, you know, how you got into mobile home park investing originally, you know, coming from the IT field?
Yeah, sure. From tech to low tech, right?
I was like, that's a big transition there.
Well, yeah. And before I share my story, it's like, yeah, I mean, I'd never done anything real estate related before. So it really was two different worlds.
Wow.
So yeah, I was always in tech, had an IT business, had a marketing business that really grew. And I was averaging 90 hour work weeks, pulling all nighters, managing a team of 40 something folks. Mm. And something had to give. My wife had a really busy corporate career. And I met an awesome friend, Tim, that owned parks. And this guy, he had just like opposite lifestyles. Like, what is the deal? I was intrigued, man. I was like, something's got to give. I want to know what this guy's doing. So that was the start. And so my wife, Kristen, she goes to a Frank and Dave mobile home park boot camp, comes back, says it's awesome. And I'm like half paying attention because I'm like, I'm running a business here. Sounds great. And she's like, you know, I think this is, that was 15 years ago. And wow. She's like, I think this sounds really good. It might be, you know, might be something for us to look into. So she purchases our first park while I'm like still half paying attention. The park does exactly what it's supposed to. A year later, as I'm starting to sell the business, I go to the same Frank Dave boot camp, make really good friends with the guys. And the rest is history. And so, you know, fast forward, long story short, I worked with Frank and Dave. I sourced dozens of deals. I sourced like 50 different parks. That was another business I did. Of all
like
the
wholesaling for them, or like how did
so
you
no, I was actually sourcing and assignments.
Oh, assignments.
I created an assignment business, which I did for 3 years. That was awesome and fun. And then I partnered with Frank and Dave on a bunch of parks. I owned some myself, but owned many more later. And the part of it I always liked doing the best was due diligence, right? We all have our favorite part, right? For me, it's just always due diligence. And so one day I had an epiphany. I'm like, why not just formalize this thing, see what happens? And that's how it took off. Within a year later, it just really took off. Justin joined the team, and then we really, you know, just continued to formalize it, build everything out, and probably leaving a whole lot out. But that is the shortest version I can give you of, you know, I've had many businesses, but that's my short version.
That is so awesome. And I know, you know, you and I just met at the Texco event, you know, in the gym. So out of all places, which was really cool. And I got to learn a little bit about you. But let me get this right. So you guys bought your first park 15 years ago. So that was around like 2010, 2009. Like, I think everybody and their brother wishes they got in the business at that time. You know, would you mind just shedding a little bit of light on like what it was like, right? Was it just all buying 10 caps on actuals? I mean,
I love that you say that because it was 2009, and that rings a bell now that you say that. And in hindsight, like I have a very vivid memory of it, how on the fence my wife and I were for the deal, because we were such rookies. It's like what every single rookie does, right? Yeah. Every, not mistakes, but just outlook, and you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
And so we were looking at analysis paralysis. We're looking at all the numbers, and it was a 7 cap. And we're like, oh, the park is in New Braunfels, Texas. All right. So we were so on the fence and almost didn't pull the trigger. It was from a broker. We're like, I don't know. It's, you know, I don't know how much we can raise the rents. And I think the rent at the time we bought it was maybe $260.
Wow.
And now it's at $650.
It worked out for you.
So it's just funny. You don't know what you don't know. And we were very apprehensive about our first deal, not having a freaking clue that it was a fantastic deal. And at that time, I didn't have the ability to easily look ahead and say, of course, this is a guaranteed slam dunk. So
very similar story. One of my mentors, Ryan Smith of Elevation Capital, he lives in Orlando here.
Yeah.
He tells a story about how he was looking at a deal, and I think it was in Jackson, Tennessee. It was his very first deal, him and his wife, Jamie. And before closing, he like went in the bathroom and threw up because he was like so nervous. He's like, what am I doing? You know, like this is, you know, it was a big risk, and now he owns over 10,000 lots. So that analysis paralysis thing, I think that kind of plays into doing good due diligence and how that can kind of ease some of those worries. So just real quick, because I know you still own parks now, Steve, how many parks do you own? You know, how many lots does that equal?
Yeah, I still own a dozen parks in Texas. I'm not actively buying any more for myself, but I love to help out friends, family, employees that, you know, want to purchase. 700 lots total.
Nice.
And before then, I sold at least probably about 20 parks in the past. And for a while now, I've had a dozen parks in Texas and, you know, looking to hold on to them for a while.
That's awesome. That's fantastic. And how, you know, Justin, we'll move to you. How did you and Steve get together and, you know, start this venture?
Yeah, well, thanks for opening the floor, Andrew. But I just want to like touch on the yada yada that Steve just glossed over, you know, like on his like journey through the process. You know, like he makes it sound so simple, and he's, you know, he's a maniac. I just want to brag on him for a second about like how well his parks perform, like in his current portfolio, and how highly and finely tuned they are, and all the true like the blood, sweat, and tears that, you know, he kind of just skips over as like, yeah, that's just what you do to get to where I am. So, you know, the sacrifice is, you know, trivial to him. So just wanted to say, like, you know, everybody is super impressed. Like, so don't gloss over that stuff. It does take hard work, but it is attainable. So just kind of want to throw that out there.
Thanks, awesome. Justin.
But yeah, of course. As far as like, you know, my story, yada yada, I did some stuff. And then before, you know, like it was like the end of 2020, you know, we're like, everybody's just like, what are we doing here? You know, like, I'm kind of like working from home for this capital manufacturing equipment company. We're making agriculture equipment. It was like a startup, and we were making it work. It was for industrial hemp. And it was, you know, it was a good opportunity at the time. Total random, right? Like, it's nothing to do with real estate. Why am I even on this podcast? The CEO of my business school said, hey, there's an opportunity that I think you need to take a look at. And I came and, you know, met with Steve here, and he's like, hey, I'm ready to transition out. You know, I need some help growing this company or just, you know, maintaining it, whatever. And this might be a good fit for you. So 1, 2, 3, we partnered up, and like he said, the rest is history. You know, so I've been here at the helm, quote unquote, since then. And been working hand in hand to provide this service to the industry. You know, it was obvious to me how much of an opportunity it was to work with smart, motivated, dedicated people, you know, that are trying to get into this industry. I saw a population that's being underserved and that, you know, affordable housing is always in a need. It's, you know, you want to say like recession proof, like it's not going away, you know, it's only going to be more in demand. Things keep going the way they are. So, yeah, it was totally. Yeah. So
no, that's fantastic. Wow. And yeah, now it's 2024. Maybe just step back and tell us a little bit about due diligence partners and like what that process looks like and what the full service is that you provide to, you know, operators in the acquisition phase.
So let's start with the pieces of it. And that's, there's two pieces of it, and that's the offsite and the onsite. And for the offsite, that's everything behind the screen, if you will. It's everything you can figure out about the deal before you actually physically go look at it. So, you know, from it's kind of fun to look at how you would approach a new deal from, you know, when you compare the rookie investor to the more experienced investor, right? So you're the rookie investor and you go to Frank Day boot camp, which is awesome, but it's a 3-day boot camp, right? If they cover all the things you should know or all the nuances, it would be a 100-day boot camp, but it's not. Yeah. It's a 3-day boot camp, right? So you know, there's all the basics that we all know about for offsite. You ask for the DD materials, you ask for the rent roll, you ask the city what the type of zoning is and so forth. And so that's the offsite stuff. And then there's the onsite piece of it. So where does DDP come in? So DDP comes in where we've got 600 tasks total, give or take 50.
Wow.
And that's a lot of things on the list, right? Well, the list is only as good as the person that's using it. Mm. So if one of those things on the list fails, it spawns off 10, 20 other things that we look into. I could give you a billion examples, but let's just say, for example, the zoning thing, right? The very first thing that happens on day two is we kick off about 30 questions on average to the city, asking them about all the zoning and compatibility and usability and code issues and all of that. Well, it comes back and it's a legal non-conforming park. Well, that's just about every park in America, right? We've got 50,000 parks in the US. And so now what? Well, with our experience, it's then we dive in and there's so much back and forth. Legal non-conforming doesn't mean anything these days. There are so many underlying restrictions that if you don't know what to ask, you're simply not going to find out. You're not going to uncover it, right? For example, does a new buyer trigger this and that? Are there home age restrictions? So many things. So that's the offsite piece, right? Then there's the onsite piece. The onsite piece is everything from droning technology. And when I say droning technology, it's not like a pretty flyover. We have commercial software where we pre-plan a flight. It's autonomous, takes off, takes hundreds to thousands of pictures. And then when it's done, stitches them all together for an interactive 2D, 3D topography map that we use to get exact numbers and measurements and even quotes like on everything. So then the onsite piece of it is, and here's the part where like Justin yada yada, you know, he glazed over it. Well, there's just like so much management Justin does, so much work Justin and the teams do, because there's the onsite team and there's the offsite team to coordinate everything. It's just never ending. And so whether either you're like the rookie or the experienced investor, not too many folks want to follow up with the vendor four times.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And so the onsite part of it is everything from insane amounts of coordination and follow up with not just vendors, but even management, cities. Onsite management, right? It's like,
yeah, cities especially.
yeah,
municipalities
to follow and up the with city, them. Like everybody else is for.
Yeah,
the amounts of back and forth. And so, you know, it just, I mean, take a simple example. You know, asking the manager to make sure everything is unlocked so you can go in the homes. Yeah, right. You show up and there's hardly any keys for the homes and nobody's gotten the required notice they were supposed to get to go into the homes, right?
Yep.
If you don't know what to ask, it just doesn't happen. And so the on-site team coordinates all this stuff ahead of time, especially if there's private utilities. Then we've got operators involved and knowing what level of operators they are and yada, yada.
Yeah.
And,
state EPA requirements, things like that.
And I think we should step back for a second because we're kind of diving into this and getting in the weeds.
I know, like, it's hard to.
I think like, you know, other asset classes, right? Like I dabbled into self-storage, right? And like the due diligence was so much more straightforward, right? Because it's just metal boxes on a concrete slab.
Sure.
Where with mobile home parks, you know, a lot of these assets are 50 years or older, you know, like extremely old assets. And the utility infrastructure is such a core component of what you're buying in that land improvement.
And, well said.
And when they're that old, you really like we haven't even really talked about that, right? The whole utility infrastructure, but like that's a whole, you know, undertaking to test the quality, and it can extremely affect your CapEx budgets and expense ratios and so forth. So I think that's why we're kind of talking about this is due diligence is a lot. And, you know, if you don't have a team internally and can afford to like do that, you know, your guys' team handles that in-house for service. And I think it's brilliant because I was telling someone the other day, you know, when you go to the Frank and Dave Bootcamp, you get this 30-day due diligence handbook, right? And it kind of covers, you know, a lot of the big stuff, right? That is better than not having anything. But, you know, I think it had like 50 checklist items in there. And now that we've bought, you know, as many parks as we have, our list has grown to 350 checklist items. You just said your guys' is 600. And you guys do this all day, every day. So like that is what you're paying for is that experience, which is, you know, tremendous because there's little stuff, right? Like one mistake that I made, I didn't meet with the power engineer on one of my acquisitions. I only met with an electrician. We went and looked at all the pedestals. They looked fine. There was some missing conduit here and there. So, you know, we got a quote to get that covered up, but we didn't meet with the power and, you know, company engineers to realize that, oh my goodness, there's only 5 transformers in this whole 61 lot mobile home park. Oh, like weird. There should be a transformer for every 5 or 6 homes. Otherwise you're going to have brownouts and you're not going to be getting juice to, you know, especially new homes that come in with 200 amp, you know, panels. So had to, and then the power company, which normally, you know, 90% of the time pays for new transformers. This one didn't. So we had to buy new transformers and get those installed, which are, those are not cheap. So that's kind of why we're looking at due diligence and why it's so important. I guess one thing that we had when we posted on LinkedIn, people wanted to know your horror stories, right? They wanted to know what are the things you found in these mobile home parks that just were like super scary. I mean, a lot of these things are mobile home parks are owned by mom and pops who do curious things, right? Like put a lot of underground storage tanks and they put concrete on everything. You know, maybe you guys can tell us some of your horror stories. How about we start with you, Steve?
Yeah, sure. You know, and talking about on-site though, that can like kind of segue into some of these crazy stories. Is the other way to summarize on-site is it's a team of 2 to 3 people that are on-site for 2 to 3 days. So everything comes out, all the horror stories, all the craziness, everything comes out. Versus when you're a rookie buyer at the beginning, you can't spend more than an hour or two on site because you don't know what to do with yourself. You don't know what to look at more. You don't know what more questions to ask.
Ask, right? Like the plumber that the seller used, you know, it's kind of important to get him on site if you can to see where he fixed water main lines. You know, like if you're talking to just some random third party plumber, he's not going to have that insight. So I agree.
Yeah. Or so you just have, you know, more important things to do with your time. You're looking at 15 deals. You know, you're like, I don't have 3 days to spend at this property, but you need to, you know.
Totally.
So, yeah. So crazy stories. I would say what comes to mind to share with your passive investors is probably things related to infill. I mean, at the end of the day, that's everything is based on the usability of the property. That's it. End of story.
Yeah.
And there have been many crazy stories, but the ones that hurt the most are when you can't do what you want to do, your intended use of the property or your intended expansion. And so, like, one that comes to mind, there was a park in Missouri, and on paper looked great. Numbers pretty good. And one of the vacant areas was 40 lots. Cool. So we go on site and nothing looks too crazy from the top down. But then we start, you know, doing the normal things. Like we always do a video inspection. We plan that ahead. We've got vendors and backup vendors scheduled because inevitably we'll have issues with vendors. And so we start to probe around and we can't. Well, it's like, why can't we look at what this is not? This is more than just like some, you know, in the sewer lines, things for the listeners that are new to investing. They might not know what bellies and terminology like that means, right? Mm. But generally, your infrastructure is half of the value of the property. And so you need lines and you need things to travel through those lines freely without issues. So, you know, we inspect those lines and we do a video camera inspection. And there's a difference between going through it and saying, okay, we've got issues and identifying them versus the lines are collapsed. They're gone. They're destroyed. So for this example, in this particular job, the lines had collapsed. Everything had collapsed because it hadn't been used in over 20 years, but it was just like worst case, completely disintegrated. Got a hold of a particular person in the city after the fact, because then we had to ask questions about permitting and would there be issues with getting those lots back online? And one of the people in the city knew about it. They're like, oh yeah, those, you know, it just wasn't disclosed by the seller, right? So here we've got 40 lots gone, would have to be completely redeveloped. And somebody in the city even knew about it, you know? So that's one. Justin, I'll let you share some more, but that's like a small, I have many bigger, horrible stories, but that was the first one that came to mind. That's just a very straightforward infill issue.
Yeah. And if you're planning on infilling, that's why, like, a lot of people that we've had on the show, previous operators, you know, some people stay away from infill because, you know, there's more risk. There's more things that can go wrong. But if you didn't, you know, try to camera those sewer lines and you're budgeting $25,000 per lot to come in there and put homes on those lots, then you get in there and you need $300,000, $400,000 in new sewer lines. You know, your budget's out the window. Your 20% IRR is now, you know, a lot less. So it's really, really important on the forefront to get proper due diligence done. So yeah, Justin, you got a story for us?
I've got a few. I mean, I've got a lot. I mean, there's a story for every single park you look at, really. And I kind of love reading through the, you know, investor groups on LinkedIn and stuff, because I hear people like, oh, I just did this, or this was the mistake I made. And frankly, from, like, you know, like a passive investor standpoint, like, I like seeing that stuff. I'm like, cool. You know, you've been baptized by fire. You've gone through, you know, like, you've gone through these things, because it really does take the experience to know what you're looking at. Some of the, you know, kind of on that same property, just to like expand on that story that Steve was just talking about, you know, he said the lots haven't been used in a while. And you're like, well, why not? Like, you know, because brokers or whoever else, you know, not to just throw them under the bus, but, you know, they're doing their job. They're trying to sell a property and they're like, oh, there's tremendous upside. There's 30 vacant lots at this thing. And then we go on there and there's like grass growing over everything. And it was like, these clearly have not been used in a long time. We're like, what's going on here? On top of the sewer lines being completely collapsed, which is probably the reason why they hadn't placed a home there, we then, you know, the offsite team went to the city and they had this like 12-month vacancy rule. So even if you wanted to bring the homes in and assumed like, okay, I'm going to underwrite the appropriate amount of money for these, you know, replace the utilities, it was like, hey, if your lots have been vacant for over 12 months, you lost them. And the reason for that and why this is so important to talk to the cities is because they had plans to completely redevelop the area into like this like new community center. They just wanted this thing gone, and they were doing everything they possibly could to get rid of it. So, you know, this is like a, you know, like a cake for an attorney, right? They're just like, yes, let's fight the city. I imagine, you know, because they're just doing, they're throwing everything they can at this property to like, to get rid of it, to shut it down. One thing that kind of just talk about a different story. We ran Didi in this park, and it was like northern Wisconsin. And one of the things we always do is lease audits. And we always look through the lease audits, and we're looking for quirky stuff. You know, we're like, what's in here? That's, you know, we're not attorneys, but you know, if we see something that's clearly outlandish or weird or completely lacking. And one of the things that we noticed at this property was there was no mention of like compliance with local regulations or anything like that. It was like, you know, tenant-owned homes can do whatever they want. And we're like, okay, this seems weird. It's like not a good recipe. Well, on-site team gets to the property, and we're going through, and we're like, these sheds seem kind of close to the homes. This is like a 250 lot property. Like, and you know, we're kind of like, we fly the drone, like Steve said, and then we did our digital measurements, which is accurate to like an inch. And we're like, these sheds are about 3 feet from the homes. And again, there's a lot of them. We're talking hundreds of sheds here. Well, come to find out, we report that back, you know, to the offsite, and they're like, the shed's got to go. Like it's a health and safety violation. The fire chief was like, nope, like you can't have those. It's, you know, the fire can jump from the home to the shed. They're all wood. Should have mentioned that. And he was like, I'm not having it. So you're not going to get a operating permit until these are removed. So the new buyer had no idea until we found it, of course. And the seller was basically like, well, I'm not going to get rid of them because then I got to disrupt my tenant base and get rid of all these sheds. It was a giant nightmare for all, you know, 250 tenants to remove their sheds basically from this property. So it was just a little gotcha.
A major problem. And I think it's important to know too that, like, you know, going in, you may be using a local bank or a credit union to buy these mobile home parks, right? Because they don't fit the mold, right? So most operators, that's who they're using. But then when they refinance, they plan, like us, we plan on using agency finance. And it's like the best debt available for mobile home parks there, or like conduit CMBS financing. Well, when you go through getting financing with the agencies, for example, they are very stringent. They have their own engineers they send out to the property. They have their own phase one person, their own Alta survey person that they're sending out to the property, and they're going to find everything. So, you know, we got just a boundary survey on one of our parks we bought, you know, when I first started, and thought that was sufficient. And then we went to refinance into agency financing and found out that six of the lots had gas lines underneath of them, which that would have showed up on an Alta survey.
Yeah,
the Alta survey was like $7,000, and this was a 50 lot park. And we're like, the credit union that we used to finance the deal only needed a boundary survey. So there's other reasons to kind of do a full look of these properties, because again, the newer homes are longer, and they lay differently on these smaller lots, you know, based on when the park was developed. So that's
true.
Really good. That's good. Steve, let me throw a question your way. If you were looking to invest passively with another like mobile home park syndicator, you know, general partner operator, what are like the top questions you would ask of that GP, you know, before investing with them, knowing what you know about due diligence and everything and your experience so forth?
Sure. I mean, to approach it from my investor hat on, I would, for me, track record's everything. So I have a hard time investing or working with anybody that doesn't have a proven track record. So for me, that would be number one. Number two is, as an investor, I would be curious about how the property is secured. Like I've had some friends that have invested in a few various funds, and a few of them got burned because they didn't look at the fine print. And they didn't look into the details of how the payouts would happen, and how much the risk was spread. So, for example, I mean, you can invest in just one property, or you can invest in a fund where the risk is spread across 10 to 20 properties.
Exactly.
And if you have one blow up, who cares? So that's what would come to mind for me from an invest, just strictly from a standpoint of securing my investment. From a due diligence standpoint, I would probably be very annoying. I would, you know, again, if the company had a proven track record of this not being their first rodeo and it's their sixth fund, then I'm like, these guys do most, and I mean, like, I have a company that comes to mind, right? They do 80% of the DD work that we do, okay? They have over 300 parks. And inevitably, some of the parks blow up because shortcuts were taken to look at certain things on the infrastructure or whatever. It doesn't matter. That's okay. They've already assessed that risk. And when one or even two parks blow up, if it's part of a portfolio of 20, it doesn't kill the deal. It doesn't affect. Everybody still gets returns and distributions. So, but if I were to invest, let's just say, in a group that's doing it for the first time and doesn't have a track record, then I would want information on every property and to better understand what the market strength and infill opportunities are for every for every single property, so that I could have a, you know, pretty good stronghold of really understanding what the portfolio consisted of.
Yeah, it's very hands-on, right? If you're going to put money at risk, you want to know, hey, what, you know, what are we looking at here? So that's good feedback. You know, Justin, same question. You know, if you were going to invest passively with a mobile home park operator, you know, what are questions you would ask? What are things you'd want to look at? You know, to make sure that it was a solid deal.
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, so we were asked to think to do this podcast probably a month ago, maybe a little bit over that. I don't want to like sell your secrets or anything, Andrew, but obviously I was doing my due diligence. So I wanted to look into you a little bit and see what was going on. And I've been following along and, you know, my answer to your question ties into what I'm talking about here. And just that a lot of the things I want to know are around mindset. Because, you know, for me, experience will get you about 25% of the way there, but you could have been lucky, you know, and you could be too dumb to realize that you were lucky, you know, like when you were just like, people were burning hot and in, you know, 2009 or whatever, or 2021, the interest rates were, you know, in the gutter and you're just riding the wave, you know, I'm just like, okay, yeah, you got a couple easy wins. Not to say that that was Steve in any way, but, you know, just like, show me your losses and show me your character, you know, like, and I think you've been doing a great job, Andrew, specifically of illustrating like who you are as a person, you know, with your like online presence. So that's something I'm certainly looking into. I want to know the people that are running it. I want to know their strategy. You know, I want to understand what their integration plan looks like, because like you said earlier, you're buying this old asset, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's been around for a long time. Well, you're a new company buying an old asset. What are you just going to run in and take it over and everything's going to be like hunky dory? Like, no, this is essentially an M&A. Like you're folding this thing into your organization. What do your processes look like? You know, what's your capital reserve allocation going to be? You know, like how much extra, you know, are you keeping on the table for the inevitable things that are just going to pop up, regardless of however much you're covering in due diligence? And then when you do cover a thorough due diligence, are you hiring DDP? Is my first screening question. That's kind of a joke, but not joking. You know, you really should. And then after that, what are you going to do with that information? Are you going to roll it in your operations? Or are you just going to throw it out the window and be like, we just adjust the underwriting a little bit? Those are some of the things that come to mind. One of the other things that really sticks out, and Steve kind of touched on this, but it's I've come to realize from all of our clients, being that we work nationwide, we see it in different geographical locations, is how well do you know the market? And if you don't know the market super well, like, what's your plan to like overcome that? Like, you know, naivety in that location. You know, I've seen a ton of our clients that know the guy, you know, like the guy that just moves homes. He knows all the plumbers. He knows the other park owners. And you get this kind of like synergy. You get like the cheapest rates and the best work, and it can save your butt when times are tough, you know? And if you don't know those folks, like, what are you doing to overcome that hurdle? Those are a couple of things that come to mind that I'm looking for.
That is huge. And I don't think we've ever talked about that before, but you are so right. And how do you meet the guy?
The guy.
You go on site. You go on site. You talk to all the tenants. You got to talk to the people at the city. You talk to the plumbers. You talk to everybody. And that's how you meet the guy. And you're exactly right. There's one guy that, you know, totes mobile homes, and he happens to have like a few, you know, mobile homes that he sells that are used in his back lot. And he sells them for like $4,000 each. And, you know, that's the guy to go to. Otherwise, you're paying 30 grand for homes to come in from a dealer. So agreed. That's really good feedback, Justin. Thank you for that.
Of course.
Steve, going to you, what are the absolute essential due diligence, like documents needed from a seller of a mobile home park in your eyes? Like the bare essentials. Like if they're like, I got nothing, I'm a mom and pop owner. Mm-hmm. What are you like, hey, I need this or I walk away?
Yeah. So I think we know what the standard list looks like, right? And probably most of your listeners know what the standard list looks like. It's like your rent roll, your asset list, your staff information, you know, those dozen things, your you know, your balance sheet, your P&L, you know, so those like the list of a dozen things, right? But to take a step back from that, it's like whether you're buying it or you're an investor, like your goal is to figure out what the story is behind the park. Every park is like a different person, has a different character, different personality, and performs differently. So bottom line is your job is to tell the story. So when you get that list of standard docs, do you have a story, yes or no? If the answer is no, then you need a lot more follow-up docs. So say, for example, rent roll, right? Okay, great. You've got the rent roll. But you should do a lot more off-site work before you move on to the on-site. So do you have a historical rent roll? Do you understand what the exact turnover is? Do you know exactly how many evictions have been filed every year? So I would recommend thinking about it from that perspective, right? Again, the list is only as good as the person that's using it. So you've got your list. If you can't quickly fill in a story for the whole park and behind each item, you're likely missing context, which means you need to ask for a lot more follow-up docs. And, you know, my last point on that is, especially if you're a rookie investor, don't try to work everything into the PSA, the purchase agreement possible, because that can scare off a seller. Mm. I think the best way to approach it as far as just initially getting the deal under contract is to stick with and ask for your standard dozen items. Keep it simple. After the fact, as soon as you've got it tied up and under contract, the leverage changes. Now the buyer has more leverage. Now you can ask for those things that you need to have. We have to have, like DP, for example, we ask for 100 more items after the fact and we always get them. Mm. And that's because paint the whole picture, fill in the story before we go on site.
It's tough because I just find us, you know, with mom and pops that have very, you know, handwritten rent rolls and their financials are mixed up for some reason with other business interests. And, you know, there's just weird stuff happening, right? And you're trying to, like you're saying, you're trying to write the story of, oh, her daughter is the manager. That's why they're paying her $100,000 a year. You know, and you're just trying to identify this stuff. And then, you know, you always hear, oh, you know, if they pay me in cash, I kind of don't put that on the books. You know, I put that in my pocket. So you're hearing these things and you're trying to take it, you know, at surface level.
Yeah.
But if you don't get a T12, for example, which, you know, happens a lot because people, you know, we're asking for tax returns and they're saying, hey, that's confidential information. I'm not sharing that with you. You're like, oh, can I get a T12? They're like, what's that? You know, what do you say then? You know, what is like your bare minimum, or do you walk away from that deal? It might be a good one. You know, if you got estoppel letters or something, like, do you go that far?
I'm so glad you mentioned that, Andrew, because should clarify, when I say we always get the information, that means for clarity, we rebuild the information from scratch. I mean, that's really, we're making maps, we're designing maps that don't exist. And then on the offsite side of things, we are literally rebuilding. And when you're talking about the mom and pop asset, exactly. We're rebuilding chicken scratch. Yeah. So we start with chicken scratch. And then we rebuild it from the ground up. And if the clues are not everywhere else for what the turnover is, what all the historical information is, then there are all these red flags for the on-site team to just hit the ground running with really fast, to look at how many homes are actually occupied to figure out what the exact income really is.
Yeah, no, that's really good insight there. Justin, going over to you, what equipment is absolutely essential when completing on-site due diligence in your eyes?
Great question. So there's a couple ways to answer that. And I think the most important thing to think about that you should have with you while you're doing on-site is the off-site work. I know that maybe sounds silly, but it's not like a trick answer. It's just like, it's all the preparation that you did before you got there. It's the list of the vendors that you're planning, you know, on meeting, and the schedule of when they're going to be there, and the backup vendors. It's the survey, the easements and encroachments. And you want to, you know, compare those to the boundary, you know, as you're walking the perimeter fence, you know, historical maps, you know, you definitely want every map that you can get a hold of. You know, you go to all the websites, you know, Google Earth and all that stuff, and just like print that stuff out, take it with you. You want lot maps, park on home maps, you know, contact information for the folks, blah, blah, blah. Okay. So those things are super critical. And I mean, you can't gloss over them. I'm trying to, but I'm fighting myself. You can't gloss over it. All right. Then you have like the technical stuff. I mean, you need the obvious thing, like your first line gear, you know, protect yourself. Like, who knows what you're going to be walking into? There's roaming dogs at these parks, depending on the class of the investment, you know, like, you get super sunburn if you're out there for a long time, you need your water, whatever. But the gear you're probably really asking about is what's like the tech gear that's going to help you accomplish your mission. And, you know, for me and the team, the bare minimum is a camera. And typically it's a camera phone that you can take notes with, and you can record pictures and videos of documentation. And you want along with that, you want a battery to be able to charge it, you know, cause your phone's going to die in an hour, or you want a backup phone or something, you know, have a plan in place, because you need to document this stuff, because you're going to look at it and go, wow, that's horrible or disgusting or whatever. And you're going to, and for some reason we always seem to forget about it. And it's paramount that you record this stuff so that later when you get off the property and you have time to decompress, you can most importantly quantify what you saw while you were there. So I think kind of luxury item, get a drone, you know, get a drone company to come out and do the mapping for you. And that way you can annotate and quantify the things that you find, you know, on the property, potholes, spider cracking, things like that. Yeah. Trees.
Can I add on to that too?
Of course.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, please. You know, I think it took me at least 20 DD jobs back in the day to learn that redundancy. If I didn't have the redundancy, it would always bite me in the butt. Mm, so true. Have two and even a third backup of every single thing. So let's start out with what Justin was mentioning for what you're bringing in from on-site, right? So you've got all this tech information, but then we've got a paper backup. So we literally have killed a forest to print 100 pieces of paper, because we've got at least a dozen maps, all the parcel maps, all the lot, all the different types of lot maps, all the different types of rent rolls and so forth that we've created ourselves. So we've also got this backup on paper, because we've got one shot at this. We don't want to have to schedule another trip. So then moving on to the on-site is, you know, it took years of experience to even learn what to do when things overheat. So not just having a backup, you know, not just having like backup batteries and backup phones and things like that, but what do you do in the scenario of, do you have ice packs with you? If you're, you know, you're at a property in the dead of summer, you know, where it's 105 degrees, right? or the opposite, or it's too cold. Are you prepared? So really just when you have your list of things that you need for on-site, just make sure you have a secondary of everything, and you can appreciate that tip later.
Yeah, the charger thing for the cell phone is a huge one. Mine always dies because I'm
every time
photos and trying to do all that. So that's huge. One thing I didn't hear you say, but I'm sure you guys have it somewhere, or maybe the drone does this, but like a measuring wheel. We have like the little wheel
that measures out
the vacant lots, because that's huge, you know, with the setback requirements and everything. But
yes,
you guys probably do it a fancy way with the drone, which is
we do it with the drone. However, there has been a couple parks that are like, you know, touching an airport or something, or you know, military installation, and there's no fly zone, and we roll out the wheel just like everybody else.
Yeah,
you know, we roll out the wheel. You can use laser rangefinders would be another, you know, like if and some folks, you know, they might have a golf laser rangefinders or something for you know yardage. Yeah, just little handy stuff.
Let me ask this to you, Justin. What do you think is like the most costly due diligence item not normally done by mobile home park operators that, you know, don't use you guys?
Sure. Honestly, it's probably quantifying. It's adding everything up. And the reason I say that is you're going to go to the park and you're going to see stuff. And you're going to do a job of adding some of it together in your head or on paper or whatever. But it's
CapEx, like repairs needed, money needed.
Yes.
Like quantifying dollars to repairs needed, right?
That's right. And in aggregate, right? Critically is adding it all together. Because you might be like, oh, I think there's some trees, you know, like use the word, some trees to trim. Or I think there's some spider cracking on the roads. And getting like quantifying that and putting it all together, even if you have the experience and even if you see it, even if you've done this 100 times, it's like truly being, you know, just the most, you know, scrupulous nitpicky guy about putting this all together and adding it up. Cause it's shocking how fast it can add up, you know, just trash, like how much trash is there, that how many roll-offs do you need? You know, exactly. You know, you need three or 13.
And maybe this would be a good time to share our motto for everybody else to adopt, because DDP's motto is remove the subjective. So what happens is, especially if you're in a hurry, you kind of glaze over things and you say, this is a problem, that's a problem, without quantifying an exact number. So when we say remove the subjective and quantify it, every single item. So if there's anything subjective about it, it needs to be fixed. That's not an acceptable answer. So for example, like for on-site, the average deferred maintenance we find, this is an average, it's $220K. So in our reports, every single thing that comes up and is found and identified goes into three cost buckets: 0 to 10,000, 10,000 to 50,000, and BK plus. And then at the end of the report, and then there's an aggregate and it totals, this is how much, okay? So, I mean, we've had parks that had, we found $1 million in you know, deferred maintenance. So that's the beauty of it. When you remove the subjectivity and you quantify it to an exact number and accompany it with picture and video evidence, it becomes more material fact and it can't be disputed. And so what happens is, like, one of the industry trends we're seeing is there's still a lot of retrading going on, but you can't retrade. And for newer investors, retrading means a bunch of things that have accumulated that are definitely beyond what the expected, you know, property it was. And so you are asking for a deduction in the price of the sale. But, you know, what you often see is that it becomes not an argument or a battle, it's just differences of opinion depending on how it's presented. So if you can present the information with everything adding up and it's quantified and the subjectivity is removed, it's like it really, really can't be You know, it really can't be
Can't be disputed, which is good. And then you can decide if you want to go to the seller and ask for a reduction or a repair credit. No, I think that's super valuable. Yeah. And maybe you decide, hey, you know, this is what we really need. This is what we'd like to have, you know, to try to come to a new number. No, that's really important. I want to ask this to you, Steve. You know, what do you think the perfect mobile home park looks like and why?
The perfect mobile home park.
Like, what are your parks? You have a dozen of them. You know,
I do. All of my parks are absolutely perfect.
So they do perform well.
So they are perfect for what I look for, which is stability, right? Mm-hmm. I've got operator friends that all they could care about is infill. Period. End of day. How much meat is left on the bone for them to go in and fill up, you know, 100 more lots. For me, my buying strategy never changed. It was always find stable parks in super strong markets. And I happen to score with that. I mean, half of my portfolio is in New Braunfels, Texas. I have 6 parks in New Braunfels, Texas. It doesn't get hotter than that. Wow. And of course, they stay 100% occupied. So for me, for what I want as an investor and to be as passive of an investor as possible, it's filled up stable parks. That's my idea of a perfect park. For you, I'd love to hear what yours is. What's your perfect park?
Yeah, like you said, it's different, right? And I look at it from like a value standpoint, like, you know, hey, is it a 70% occupied park? So there's some room for some infill. Is it direct build public utilities in a market with a median home price over 250K? You know, if it's the perfect one, maybe it's 350, right? And I'm looking at, you know, just a cleaner product, you know, that looks like a subdivision, I would say, and majority pitched roof homes. You know, I think that the age of the homes matter, you know, with turnover. Because I think that's one thing on some of our early parks we bought that have an older home vintage is we see higher turnover, you know, on those parks. And that is like the hidden CapEx dollars that eat away at your cash flow. So, yeah, those are a couple pieces of, you know what I would say a perfect park looks like. Justin, do you have anything that you would add, you know, for your perfect park that we didn't touch on?
You know, again, I always come back to like the mindset and just like, I think I just like to think a little bit in abstract. So forgive me if it's not specific enough for, you know, for the viewers, but I always, you know, it's the almost a cliche where you can say like the ugliest house in the nicest neighborhood is kind of generally would be going into it. Something I would look for if I'm, you know, if I'm operating the park, I want something that I can put some sweat equity into and really, you know, clean it up and have it give a strong return.
Totally. Sub-meter water, sewer, kind of do some of that kind of stuff to really add tremendous value. That's awesome. Well, dude,
Undermanaged.
Guys, we've covered so much in this episode. I know we've kind of ran a little long, but thank you for coming on the show. If anyone would like to get a hold of you guys or DDP, what would be the best way for them to do so?
Well, you can send us an email, just justin@duediligencepartners.com would be great first line of contact. Go to our website, duediligencepartners.com. It's the easiest way.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you so much, Justin. Steve, before we log off, what's one last bit of important advice you would give an interested passive mobile home park investor?
I'd say figure out what your definition of passive is. It's funny how different passive is one person to another. Mm. So ask yourself that lifestyle question. Do you really... Will you be happy and will you be okay being completely removed from what's going on? Or are you always going to have your hands in it? So I would say really, you know, understand yourself and it will only help you out and whatever team you're working out where you're working with better to start out with that clarity.
That's a good point. And, you know, for a lot of people that have like W-2 jobs that are completely out of real estate, you know, like, do you have what it takes if you want to be active to do the due diligence and everything that's required to buy a property? Or would it be a better fit to be passive, you know, and invest with an operator that has a track record and does the proper due diligence and has the time full time to dedicate to that? So that's good feedback, Steve. Thank you for that. Well, Justin, Steve, thank you guys again for coming on the show. This was awesome.
It was our pleasure. Thank you so much for having us, Andrew.
Thank you, Andrew. Appreciate your podcast.
Yeah, that's it for today, folks. Reminder, please leave a review if you got value out of this show. Thank you all so much for tuning in.
Would you like to see Mobile Home Park value add projects in progress? If so, follow us on Instagram at @passivemhpinvesting for photos and awesome videos from our recent mobile home park acquisitions. Once again, that's @passivemhpinvesting on Instagram. See you there.